Donna, I've been on the other line for 15 minutes.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
That's an old number. I wonder if somebody should call that just to, well, I guess not. People have got the number, so I guess they'll figure it out.
I called Saul, and she gave it to me. She had sent it anyway, but I didn't realize.
Maria checking in.
Okay, hello.
Hi. I'm going to start with an invocation while people are checking in. Hello, everybody who just came on the line. In the name of the Christ, we call now to the mighty I Am presence of each one of us. We call on the yellow ray. We call especially to beloved Lord Lanta, beloved Gautama Buddha, Maitreya, beloved Jesus and Kasumi, beloved God and Goddess Meru, beloved Mother and Lonello, and all those who are assisting at inner levels with this class, all those who are recently ascended. We ask for each of those recently ascended masters to take on one or more of our students and to help them prepare to deliver the word of the their I Am presence. We ask specifically this night for your overshadowing presence over Hermes, Robert Allison, Elizabeth Anderson, Michael Arnett, Cheryl Bench, Kathleen Chu, Carol Daly, Lisa Delaney, Patricia DeWitt, Linda Dowell, Donna Dregan, Dubrowski, Ronaldo Dubrowski, Carolyn Dunnigan, Jackie Fletter, Nancy Frainer, Rosa Flores, Donald Galvin, Pamela Yambika, Joyce Hennis, Maidel Gulart, Marcia Hammond, Lenore Harris, Janice Haugen, Arnie Gelda Dortier, Anita Holbert, Ilona Iris, Gwendolyn Kletter, Donna Korth, Deborah Lamore, Richard Lorenz, Maria Min, Sol Monroy, and Maria Loney, Oxford, Doreen Sajorowski, Josephine Starr, Carol Wells, Constance Wellzell, Tom Wilk, Mary Wilk, Nicola Wojwitka, Patricia Carlson, John Turnquist, Gregory Hendrika Leardom, Ken Mueller, Nancy Mueller, Patrick Rogers, Tucker Rogers, John Fanuzzi, Isabel, Paul Haugen, Patrick Wolbert, Tom Miller, David Lewis, Michael McNeil, Anita and myself. We call to the keeper of the and our friends in heaven to the fullness of the mind of God to help us to prepare our presentation, prepare for our delivery, and our teaching to a world in great We call and pray fervently for the descent of the gifts of discernment and discrimination as to, so we will know how and where and why and when the Spirit to touch a heart and to help us to prepare our material so that we can truly reach the heart and soul of each one in our audience. We ask you, beloved hosts of the Lord, to sponsor us as servitors of fire and presenters to the world of the true nature of the secret reactivity of the heart center, which we are built by brick, heart by heart, flame by flame. We ask you, beloved Maitreya, to overshadow us this night and to help us to extract the information that we need so that we can create those for the word into this world of form. We thank you. We our fill us, please, in your fiery spirit of God victory this day. Amen.
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 Welcome, everyone, to class number 2. This is Anita. And I just wanted to go through what we're going to be doing tonight. We'll have a very short review from last week. We'll have presentations from you. So we'll have two people chosen at random. I'll close my eyes and just point to a name on the list. Invite you to give your presentation. We'll have our new topic will be on assessments. And another new topic will be building your syllabus. And you'll have a homework assignment. And if there's time at the end after going through this, then we'll have more of the 5-minute presentations that will be given today. So that's kind of what we'll be doing. I want to say that we are absolutely thrilled that each of you has chosen to take this class. It's part of a wonderful alchemy the masters have planned for us. And because this avant-garde group has more numbers than we originally anticipated, we ask your understanding if we, Celeste and I, stay on topic and leave little time for your personal comments and questions just because of the nature of it. So I hope that you understand that. But it is a wonderful, wonderful thing, and we are thrilled that you are here. I just want to mention that we thought that we would be able to record all of these classes, that they could be emailed out in case you have to miss one or something. But we've had trouble the last couple of times we've tried to do this, that it seemed to be recording, but then it didn't. So I just want you to not count on getting the course emailed to you. So please plan to be here to attend the class when it's given and take whatever notes are useful to you.
I think you can ask the hosting company to record it for you.
Well, we've been working on it. I'm just saying I'm not sure tonight it's going to get recorded.
Okay.
So that's great. So maybe Sol will call.
I'm recording, and hopefully we'll get it straightened out.
Yeah, we just had a little problem, so I just want to let you know that. Okay. If you have a problem with registration, this sounds like a voicemail recording, but if you have a problem with registration, of course, please email to me the subject of your five-minute topic. And you can send it to me at A as in Anita, M as in Marie, Wolberg, W-O-L, B as in boy, E-R-D as in David, at gmail.com, amwolberg@gmail.com. Just send me your name and your five-minute topic so that we know what your topic is, and I'll compile that and send it out to you so everyone will know everyone else's topic. Okay? So if you are totally lost, checking with another student to get your question answered, that you are welcome to phone Celeste at home. I'll give you her phone number. It's 507-454-4165. 507-454-4165. And that would be after 7 p.m. Central Time on Thursday, Friday, or Saturday. Or Sunday night, not Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. But see what you can do to get your question answered. Sometimes it's amazing how the answer comes to you after you know have a chance to think about it or to reread the syllabus. But if you do, if you're feeling lost, you don't know what to do, then you're welcome to call her.
Could you repeat your email address one more time?
Mine?
Yes.
A as Anita, M as Marie.
On the
Wolberg, W-O-L, B as in boy, E-R-D as in David, at gmail.com.
Hi, Hendrika. Good evening.
Hi, Hendrika.
Yeah, calling from Minneapolis.
Thank you.
I'm so excited.
So that's what we're doing tonight. And so I'm going to go into the review, and it'll just be a short review of last week because I'm sure you are all either here or you heard the class on email. And when I really looked at my notes and the syllabus on last week, the main topic was scope and sequence from last week. So does anybody out there could like to say what do we mean by the word scope when we're talking about curriculum? What is scope?
Refers to all the information under that topic that you have.
Exactly. It is what we're presenting, the information under the topic. So the scope is what is being presented. It's the range or the extent, the span of the knowledge, the body of knowledge that will be presented, that you're choosing to present in this in the course you would be designing. If you look at the syllabus that Celeste sent out to all of us, and you look in the middle of the first page of the syllabus, it says syllabus, Mayor University, in the middle of it, it says purpose of the purpose of the course is the scope. She's very succinctly saying in sentences what the range of the, what is the topic, and also, and it's about the course, and then general objectives, the six objectives there. That's the scope also. She's saying, but this is referring to you, what you will understand, you will demonstrate. So it's about the course, about you, but this is the scope of the plan. So in the syllabus that she has written, it's a very clear picture of what you will be studying, but it's also, so it has two purposes. One is that it tells you what we hope you'll learn and you'll understand and demonstrate. And so that's the first purpose, so you know what the class is. And the second is to give a model to you of how a syllabus is organized, so when you plan your class, you will put your information to a syllabus similar to this. So it's your model. So this is something to really get, because it's a beautiful model. Okay, so there's the scope. And in order to think more about the scope, last week we made our concept map. And so the topic was education. The topic was techniques, teaching strategies. And we all made a concept map of information. That's a body of information. So from that, we would look at it and decide what part, what scope we would have. So if you're teaching, you may have a very wide scope, such as history of the Great White Brotherhood on planet Earth or something like that. That's a pretty wide scope. And you could see the papers it would take to fill all that information, and a more narrow scope would be, for instance, Joy in the Violet Flame or something like that, more narrow. So our concept map, the exercise we went through, helped us see how our knowledge is in different nodes and chunks and things to figure out the scope. Okay, so there's scope. We spent a lot of time on that last week, and we also talked about sequence. So who knows what sequence means and we're speaking of curriculum.
Sequence is the order in which I will present my story or my presentation.
Right. Okay. So we know the material, and now in what order will we present it. So that's exactly right. And so if you look at the bottom of the page of the syllabus of the course, it says course outline, and then onto the next page there are four dates with A, B, C, D, E, exactly what will be presented at each class. And so you have this organized here in the order in which the information will be given. So just wanted to go over that syllabus because that is a model for you. So that's kind of a review of what we did last week. And what we all want to do now, unless there's any burning question or comment. Okay.
Anita?
Yes.
This is Ken Mueller. I was wondering how you might be able to use the concept map to kind of pose a logic so that you could more easily identify what your actual end sequence is going to be. Or is concept map really just not really a tool for identifying that, but more just to get everything out on a piece of paper and then start kind of...
I think that's what it was. I think that was the purpose last week, is to get it out there on the table for you to have a look at your own knowledge in a specific area. And it's very useful in that way. And Celeste will be going over some of the tools that we will use to help organize the material. And that's what we'll be doing tonight. Okay?
So when you're trying to, you're not really strictly necessarily imposing these concepts of using the nodes and cross links to kind of make sure that your lines are all kind of have this everywhere, just all over, and that there wasn't any, or a few concepts that led from grouping of concepts. But other than that, it didn't seem to have much of an order that is outlined here. So I was wondering if there's anything that might give me a little bit more insight into how to group things.
Well, I just think, Ken, I wouldn't, why don't we just do the class tonight and see if you may have a clearer picture. So the last thing the concept map should be a burden, that the concept map has to look a certain way.
Okay.
But it's just kind of, it's a way to put the information out, kind of, for you to take a look at it. And so I think with what is presented tonight, I think it may be more clear to you.
I was just trying to, I guess, determine how much of a tool it is actually used to kind of get your sequence.
Yeah, I thought Celeste said last week that from the concept map, it doesn't tell you the sequence. You have to figure that out yourself. You don't get that necessarily from the concept map. It's something different.
Right. The sequence you have to figure out. What's the logical way that you want to put your material in order?
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Is that okay, Ken?
Sure.
You bet.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, great. All right, so we'd like to hear from you, and so for you, it, you know, it isn't, it's just tell us however you want to for 5 minutes what you would like to share with us.
This line is now muted.
And this is not assessed, it's not graded, it's not part of a, so this is just an opportunity, an experience opportunity for you to speak about a topic, and we're not going to analyze it and critique it after you have spoken. We're going to appreciate very much hearing from you, but it's for your experience and for the rest of us to learn from you. So we'll just do one after another, and later in the class, and anyway, so that's what we're going to do, and so we want each of you to have an opportunity to give a five-minute presentation. But because, as I said, our group is larger than we had anticipated, that we may not be able to do all of them in our 4 weeks. And so if you did not get to, do not get to present yours and you want the opportunity, there will be an opportunity on January 9th at our regular time and phone number, and Celeste will be there to listen to your presentation. So as I said, it's not something that is assessed and critiqued, and so you're is an opportunity if you would like to have it. So I'm going to just read a name from random, and if you just really aren't ready to do it and really don't want to, then you can pass, and I'll call somebody else. But if you, but I'm just going to do it from random because I know most of the people on the group, and I'm not trying to do favorites or anything like that. So I'm just going to run my finger down. And so, Lenore Harris?
Hello.
Are you ready to give us a 5 minute?
Yes, I can tell you what I've got here so far.
Okay. I'll tell you what. At the end of 5 minutes, I'm going to ring a little bell, and that'll just let you know that you can go ahead and finish your sentence. And
Okay. My larger topic is integrating body, mind, and spirit. And I'm doing this presentation on one node, holistic healing.
Okay, great.
The words of Elizabeth Clare Prophet in her book, Your Seven Energy Centers, healing is not something that happens to us, it's something that happens within us. It starts with understanding how our emotional and spiritual health impact our physical vitality and vice versa. Holistic therapies facilitate the healing of the whole person, body, mind, and spirit, and attempt to stimulate the peace. They can often help us get to the root of a condition rather than just treating the symptoms. These therapies deal with energy flow and directly or indirectly with the body's seven energy centers. We will look at three holistic therapies. Homeopathy is a system of medicine developed in the late 1700s and early 1800s by a German physician, Samuel Hahnemann. It became popular in the United States in the decades after the Civil War. Homeopathy comes from the Greek words meaning similar and suffering, and is based on the principle of the law of similars, a principle found in Chinese and Indian texts written 5,000 years ago and referred to by Hippocrates and Paracelsus. The law of similars states that like cures like. Applied to homeopathy, it means that a substance that will cause certain symptoms in a healthy person can cure those same symptoms in an unhealthy person when given in minute doses. More than 2,000 homeopathic remedies have been created from natural substances in the plant, mineral, and animal kingdoms. Homeopathy also works from the premise that each person is unique and that there is a unique remedy for each condition. In diagnosing a condition, a homeopath will ask questions about the patient's mental, emotional, and physical condition in order to get an accurate symptom picture. The correct remedy that matches the symptoms will cause the body to respond and balance itself. The next therapy we will look at is acupuncture. Acupuncture is an ancient Chinese practice and one of the most popular alternative health treatments today. Okay. My lighting is not really good in here. Okay. An acupuncturist inserts very thin needles at different points along the meridians to increase or decrease the flow of energy to organs that might be weak, thereby restoring balance to the body. As an adjunct to the healing work, acupuncturists may also use herbs and other treatments. Maintaining a balanced diet, exercising, and creating a balanced lifestyle will all contribute to well-being. Wherever there is harmony, energy can flow freely. Acupuncturist Saskia Peck. When you are centered, when you are at peace, and when your body is strong, your organs and energy centers will be strong too, and you will enjoy physical, emotional, and spiritual well-being. Herbal medicine has become widely used in recent decades. In fact, herbs have been used since ancient times to heal the body, clear the mind, and soothe the soul. Herbs and herbal medicine help strengthen the body's innate healing abilities by cleansing and enhancing our internal environment. They can be taken internally as tinctures, capsules, or teas, and can be applied externally as ointments or poultices. The Native American mourning dove once said, "Everything on earth has a purpose, every disease an herb to cure it, and every person a mission." Thank you.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you so much.
Hooray, hooray.
Okay. All right. So
that's a part, you know, the way I'm... Well,
pardon?
Never mind. Oh, wait.
Okay. And who was that, please, Anita?
That was Lenore Harris.
Okay.
And it was just exactly 5 minutes, so
wow.
I get to ring my little bell. so you don't have to go all the way to the bell. That's great. So,
Anita, I'm wondering, can you hear me or am I actually on mute or not?
I can hear you.
Can hear you.
Okay. I'm on an old phone and I pushed the button, so let me try it again.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes I never know if I'm on
or
not.
Oh, my gosh. Thanks. And I've got family all in the background. And
oh, okay.
Sorry, hold on.
All right. Let's see. Our next one, Joyce Hennis. Are you there?
I'm here. Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes, Joyce.
Oh, okay, good. All right. I'll go ahead with it. I wasn't quite sure if I was exactly prepared, but I think this will work. Okay. My topic is surrender. And the node in my concept map that I've chosen to discuss tonight is surrender to the will of God. I would like to briefly present two sides of the will of God.
Excuse me, just a minute, Joyce. There's some noise on the line. I don't know who's... Maybe everybody should just mute for now, except for Anita and myself and Joyce.
How do you do that?
Just star 6.
Celeste, I'm having trouble. I can't mute on
this line is now unmuted.
No, you just press 6. You don't need to press star.
Star,
yeah,
just 6?
Just
6.
You can just press 6.
All
I
right,
actually got bumped off the call, and I had to call back in. So.
This line is now muted.
Sometimes that happens. And
okay.
So has Joyce started
okay,
yet?
Okay, Joyce. Go ahead.
Great.
Start again, please.
Okay.
Sorry.
I have this headphone on. Can everyone hear me okay?
Kind of. You're kind of
kind of soft.
Is it soft? Can you hear me now better?
It's better.
A little better.
All right, let's start over again then. Shall I start over again? Would that be better?
Yes, please.
That'd be fine.
All right. My topic is sweet surrender, and the node in my concept map that I have chosen to discuss tonight is surrender to the will of God. I would like to briefly present two sides of the story, the will of God versus the will of man. Which one do we want? I'll let you decide. The quotes we'll hear tonight will be from El Moria from his book, The Sacred Adventures, published by Summit University Press. Let us hear from El Moria, the ultimate authority on the will of God, a description of God's will. And he says, "As you know, down through the centuries, men have discussed the will of God as though it were a thing apart from the will of man, bearing no resemblance to an offering that affords the best gift to man. Contrary to human, it possessed us with his best man with his immortal birthright, us with our immortal birthright. In other words, to give us everything that is wonderful. It never wants to deprive us of our freedom." Okay, so El Moria goes on to say, "The enigma of life, and that's the puzzle of life, is hidden within the will of God. When properly understood, it provides a stimulus for every worthy purpose and recreates a passion for living that many have lost." Now, when El Moria talked about a passion for living, I thought, in this new activity that we have, do we have a renewed passion for living? I know I do. And what about getting up in the morning? I can't wait to get up to be with Mother Mary and my heart friends and to do the rosary. So this is what the will of God is about. It's a passion for living. And then El Morya goes on to say, what you call zest or sparkle, when imbued with the Holy Spirit, is no chimera, but a flash of joy that ripples across the belly of the world, that sways the tallest pines and moves all things toward cosmic usefulness and cosmic purpose. Now, chimera, what is a chimera? It's a horrible or unreal creature of the imagination, a vain or idle fancy. It's a mythological fire-breathing monster also. It's got it's usually depicted with a lion's head, a goat's body, and a serpent's tail. So the carnal mind has tricked us into thinking that we're actually giving up something, that we're giving up our human will for God's will. Well, we're not really giving up anything that's worth anything, that's important. Now, Moria is the master of words. He loves to use words to convey engrams. A perfect example of Moria's love of words is in his quip, and we've all been enjoying his quip. Let me just give a little quote here from El Morya about engrams. I thought this was very interesting. Therefore, these teachings on the will of God are given in order to recreate in consciousness certain engrams that will enable you to accomplish effectively and by consent your release from the carnal mind and to replace it by the buoyancy of the mind of God. Now, an engram is a geometric formula of the word that manifests as a force field of light. So his words, and this is really all of the meditations are engrams. They're geometric formula, the way they use them, the exact words that they choose, and the way that they say them, to manifest as a force field of light. Now, I wanted to read this little quote from my Zen calendar.
Okay. Goodbye.
This is from a Western master. That was all. It was not defined as anyone other than a Western master. I saw the whole idea of spiritual renunciation as a kind of joke, trying to make oneself let go of ordinary life and pleasures. In fact, nirvana is so open and joyful, is so much more than any of the small pleasures we grasp after. You don't renounce the world, you gain the world. So this is another way of saying we're not really letting go of anything that's important. We are simply gaining things that are so much more important and so much more wonderful. Now, I'm going to read another quote from El Morya here. Now, this is what El Morya has to say about this. Does life seem so wonderful and the prospect of the future based on human trends so grand that you are fearful of submission to the will of the eternal? I hope not, for in his will is strength for the ages as well as for today. So I'm thinking, no, obviously life on this planet does not seem so wonderful, or the prospect of the future based on human trends so grand that we really want to hang on to it and keep it. That's not the case at all. Let's examine one more thought here. And
Ring it louder. Okay, thank you, Joyce.
Oh, is that it? Oh, that's the bell.
That was a little bell.
did you finish your thought?
Well, I think I kind of... That's fine. It's something that would have to be allowed.
This line is now unmuted.
Very much. Our two brave...
This line is now muted.
Volunteer. They were volunteered, so thank you for being willing to do it. Okay,
and I hope you were all aware of how much information is conveyed in a five-minute period of time.
Yeah.
Really quite a bit of information. Okay, so we're going to move on now to topic C, which is on assessments. And I need to ask you to correct your syllabus because there's an error here that you could correct now and save yourself a little confusion later. Okay, where it says assessments, you'll see the word rubrics, handout 3, which is on page 7, and then it's number 9 instead of number 10 on page 15. So that's what we're going to be working now with, page 7 and page 15 of your handout. Under D, the handout should be number 8, and under E, the handout should be number 9. So we're going to go back up to handout 3 and 9. Now, the reason we're jumping right to assessments when we haven't even written our syllabus yet is because you have to know before you start what you want your pupils or your students to learn, and you've got to know what you're actually going to assess, because you have to be able to show that, in fact, learning took place. It isn't good enough just to get up and talk and give information. You have to be able to show that, in fact, the people that you talk to learned something. So that's the point of going now to the assessment. And in this class, we have suggested the use of a rubric. Now, a rubric is just a tool, and there's quite a bit of information I could tell you about rubrics. There's pros and cons, but we don't want to go there during this class. We just want to give it to you as a matrix, as a model, and if you care to use it, that's fine. If you don't care to use it, there's many other ways to assess, but it's a helpful tool if you're not used to doing assessment, and I think it's an easier one to work with than some of the others to start with. So if you look on page 7, you'll see there is a rubric, which is a series of boxes and numbered 1, 2, 3. And down the left-hand column, you'll see the top box says content, and the next box says comprehensiveness, and the next box says connections, and the next box says specificity. So those are the four areas that I am going to be assessing my teaching to you in the specific area of teaching strategies. So, and I'm going to do that by looking at your concept map number 3, which you haven't done yet, and you're going to send that to me later, and I'm going to use that, and with Anita, we're going to sit down and figure out how to apply this rubric to the information that you send to us and determine for ourselves how much information you actually were able to master. So if you look under the box that says content, you'll see there's a little increase in theoretical knowledge. Now, and then the number 2 box says moderate increase in theoretical knowledge, and the third says high level of accurate knowledge. You need to figure out for yourself what's going to go in your boxes in the rubric that you're going to create for your class or your workshop. You may not want to assess content, but you might. So if you do, it's just a way to look at this. Second one is comprehensiveness. How comprehensive were the concepts in the concept map? Did they cover a lot of different notes or just one, and so forth? So that's the breadth there. So one or two areas are more developed than others would be number 2, and then 3 would be all areas are developed, and there's a lot of detail. And once again, you're going to determine for yourself how much detail is a lot of detail, how many areas have to be covered to make it a 3, how many areas have to be covered to make it a 2 or a 1. Connections, these are across topics. You may decide you don't care if people are making connections across topics. You really only want them to learn about one topic. Then in that case, you wouldn't use connections. But if you did care, there's a few connecting lines and a lack of hierarchy or of the general to the specific concepts. When you look at the concept map, people start out with a general concept, and there's no gradually increasing specificity of knowledge. There's just the general concept, then being an application of the knowledge. That would be a limited development. And in the middle, you have some connecting lines with sudden jumps from general to specific, missing any part of the hierarchy of ideas that you've presented. And then number 3 would be many connecting lines with strong hierarchical organization from general to specific. Now, as I say, you can put anything you want to in any of these boxes. This is for you to use as a rubric. And there's hundreds of rubrics. People make up their own. There's no one formula that works for everything. And then specificity is how specific did people get about the information. So under 1, the chunks and strands were short and sparse. If you went back to your first concept map that you did on teaching strategies the very first night, and I just asked you to do write out whatever you knew. Maybe there were not very many things on that map, so maybe you would give yourself a 1 under specificity. Chunks and strands are sometimes long and dense, so a couple of things you knew a lot about, but maybe some other areas you didn't know so much about. And then a 3 would be chunks and strands are consistently long and dense. And so you happen to know a lot about teaching strategies, and so your number 1 concept map evaluation would be very high for yourself. In fact, it could be so high that you didn't learn anything in this class, and when you do the number 3 concept map to compare with your first one, you may find you were 3 all the way on number 1, and you're all 3 all the way on number 3, so that you didn't really learn anything. So that would tell us something, too, that it would tell us if we were teachers that the material was not advanced enough for you. So all this information is very helpful in many ways. Now, there's 2 ways that we're going to use the rubric map in this class. And the first one is you're going to self-assess your own learning from the first concept map you did on teaching strategies to the second one that you're going to do later on in this class, not tonight, but later on in the course. And you're going to compare what you had in the first concept map with what you had in the second concept map, and you're going to score yourself based on this grid that's right here on this page, the rubric. And neither or nor I care to know how you did. So that's just for you. That's just to see for yourself, oh, I proved to myself that I learned something because I would have given myself a 1 in content on the first one, and now I'm going to give myself a 2 or a 3 on the second one, so I guess I did learn something. Okay, but the other way where we're using the rubric is to inform Anita and myself of how much you learned from our teaching. So there's 2 uses of rubrics, and there's a self-assessment that students can give themselves, which I could collect if I wanted to, and I could look at those, and I could actually evaluate your learning and do a computer analysis of all of your learning, but I'm sorry, I don't have time to do that. So that's not going to happen. But if you were actually teaching a classroom, and that could be done, and it could be numerically shown that your students tonight, we're only going to use the grid to evaluate your own rubric. What you're going to actually expect people to learn from your presentation. And so as you sit down to write your syllabus during this next week, you're going to try to put right in these little boxes what they would have to know to get a 1, a 2, or a 3, and decide what you're going to put in the left-hand column boxes, if it's going to be content, comprehensiveness, connections, or specificity, or something different. That's for you to determine. So is everybody clear about that?
Celeste, this is Michael. I have a question.
Yes.
On content numbers 1 and 2, when you use the word increase, is that specifically comparing 1 to 3, I mean the first rubric to the third map? In other words, I'm not sure how you're using the word increase if you're just assigning it to concept map number 1 in and of itself.
You'd have to have the 2 there to compare side by side.
Okay.
Or if you were going to use it with your syllabus, for example, let's say you in the very first thing you do when you start presenting is you pass out a little activity for people to do something that shows what they know in that area, and then you would collect that, and then you could say from that there was some increase.
Okay, so it's compare didn't compare. It might be like amount of content, for example.
Yeah, it's if
okay.
you.
I get it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, so as you sit down this week to do your finalize your syllabus, you want to think about this rubric first. Okay, then once you've kind of got in your mind what would be a lot of knowledge, what would be some knowledge, what would be no knowledge or very little knowledge, then you can think about what you're going to put in your course to teach so that you can make sure it's going to cover enough material and that there isn't too much material. You know, and you might think, oh, well, I'm expecting them to know 12 things, to know comprehensiveness, and I don't think they're going to be able to learn 12 things. That's probably too many things. So maybe I should cut back and only expect them to know maybe 5 things under comprehensiveness. So this is helpful, I think, for kind of narrowing down or maybe focusing in more on what you're actually going to we share with you in this class, and they do find value in the.
I can catch up on.
Well, we hope so. We are hoping it's going to record.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so now what you want to do when you get off the phone and the rest of this week is you want to sit down and take your concept maps for your topic and analyze what you've got there, See where your big chunks are. See where your nodes take you. See how long your strands are going down, and determine from that what you already know about that you could talk about right now without having to do any research. Or if you do, and perhaps you can talk about it, but you don't know how you know what you know. You just know that you know it, but you realize that it didn't come out of your brain. So you're going to have to go back and do a little research to find out where the ideas actually did originate from in a case where it wasn't original knowledge. This is a little difficult for us who've been in the teachings for 30 more years, where we've assimilated so much teaching we don't necessarily remember which book we ever even read it from in the first place. But you will need to give credit for people's ideas as much as possible. So that may require you to assimilate it and master it. So then you look at your concept map and you determine, you know, what your topics are going to be, and then you decide how much time you actually have to teach. And as we said last class, it might be just a workshop you're going to be preparing here, or it might be a six-week class you're going to be preparing. So you'll need to know how much content you can actually cover in that amount of time. And then you kind of set your topics and then start doing your actual writing of the class, which is the research and the putting together of the ideas and actually mapping out what you're going to do each class, or each hour, or each 5 minutes. If you're giving a presentation that's an hour long, what are you going to do the first five, second five, and so forth? So any questions about that part? And as it was brought up earlier, the concept map will not necessarily tell you the sequence. What it will tell you is the range of the topic, It will not tell you how to approach the topic. It won't tell you anything about your audience. It won't tell you how much time you have to teach this topic. It won't tell you even where your research is. It just gives you, it's just a tool to kind of get you thinking creatively, but it won't help you to organize your sequence necessarily. Now, if you're very organized and you've taught this topic for many, many years, then maybe you could actually break it down. Maybe you have broken it down. And you could look at your concept map, and you can just see the outline is just staring right out there at you, because you know it so well that you just have all the nodes and all the strands, and everything is just all lined up there. That's possible. But that's not the purpose of a concept map. Okay, so let's look at handout 8, which is the actual creating of the syllabus. It's on page 14. And also, if you'll get out the sheet of paper that has the triangle on it, which shows the retention rates for different kinds of teaching and different kinds of learning. So I guess we'll start with the syllabus, and then we'll go to the triangle. Okay, so we've covered scope and sequence. Okay, so you identified the key knowledge that you want to teach based on your concept map number 2. That's the first step. You think about how you would know someone had learned this knowledge. For example, ask what they would be able to do with the knowledge. And that's how you're going to create your rubric. What knowledge, understanding, and applications are important to you? And you consider those for your rubric. And you can combine the two and number 3 into your general course description. That's what you can use to write your general course description. Then you state your objectives. How is your student going to realize the knowledge, understand, or apply the facts that you've decided are the most important? So then you create those statements that are going to be your course objectives. And the key words there are understand, or apply, or some other verb that actually tells the reader how this information is going to be valid to them. It's not enough just to say something like, let me think of a bad example here. We'll be able to discuss discuss could be a good one if it was certain settings. Be able to I don't know. I can't think of a bad one. Can somebody think of a bad one? Let's see. Know that spiritual preparation is important. That's very vague. It doesn't tell us anything about... it's very vague. So try to use verbs that are specific and that actually will give the reader an idea of exactly what they're going to be able to do with this information.
It kind of shows the benefit to the student.
Yeah.
Something about them.
Yeah. But remember, you're going to assess those objectives. So anything that you've got in your rubric that you want to assess has got to be someplace listed under your general objective. Okay, that's really important, because if it's not there, then you don't have any right to assess it, because you haven't indicated up front that you will be assessing it. And to the learner, they don't know that this is something that they're going to be able to do or expected to do. Okay, so that part is just general statements up through number 4. Now, number 5 is the order that you will introduce your ideas. This is your sequence. Now, I will tell you, having taught for many, many years, that I rarely teach a syllabus in the sequence that I laid it out. And why is that? Well, that's because I have students, real people, that I'm teaching, and they're not all on the telephone. And I can see them, and I can tell if their faces look bored, or I can tell if they're shuffling, or I can tell if they're not paying any attention. I can tell if I've lost them. So oftentimes, as you're teaching, you have to switch things around and do different things. But that's part of the art of teaching, and as you do more and more of it, you'll get to that point where you will use your syllabus less as a rigid instrument and more as a help guide to yourself, because you'll want to keep in flow with the students. And a question that gets asked can end up being a discussion that takes you off in a different direction for a few minutes, but it's very valuable, and you have to make that determination. So, you know, I don't want to give the impression that this syllabus is something that's just so rigid and you're so locked in that you can't change it once you've written it. It's just a tool. It's meant to be a tool. So you determine this order that you're going to introduce the ideas. Well, let's just say you start teaching and you find out the very first day that the first idea that you had, everybody's got this down cold. They've mastered it in some other class they've already taken, and you realize right away, well, I don't even need to be talking about this. And I've given 2 hours over to this topic, and they don't need this information. Now what? Well, then you need to move on to your next topic, you see. Or you may get in there and you do an introductory activity and you find out that these students really don't remember anything from previous courses that you know they're supposed to remember, but they don't remember a thing. So then you have to go back and review. So where you start is not necessarily always where you think you're going to start, but you have a plan. Okay, then number 6. This is the one where you're going to be using the teaching strategies, and we haven't taught you any yet, and so we don't expect that you're going to be developing probably this part of the syllabus very fully between now and next class, but you can probably get through number 1 through 5. And number 7, we've already talked about, you're going to assess learning, theirs and yours, and you have some feedback plan for how you're going to assess. And I think I've covered what our plan is to assess our class with you. Any questions so far? Okay. Now, number 8 is a tricky one. One of the problems that we found when we were trying to publish some of Mother's lectures is that the researchers in all cases did not do a very good job of recording the sources of information. And it's very difficult 5 years or 10 years later to go back and remember where you got some information that you talked about in a lecture. And you don't know but that someday you might want to publish something that you're speaking now. At the very least, if you record what you're talking about, over time you'll have a number of tape recordings of that topic, and you'll be able to even go back and more easily create a publication if you think that way already. I know you're probably thinking, well, no, I'm not going to write a book, and no one's going to write a book about this topic, or I could never write a book, or whatever you're thinking. Just don't think that way. Just think as if this were to be a book. This is going to be a book. Plan that way from the very beginning. This is going to be a book, so what do I need to have so that when the time comes for a writer to take this material and create a book, I've got everything that they're going to need, and they don't have to come back to me and say, well, where did you get this information? Well, who said that? You see? So find your experts and be sure that you document where you got the information. Page numbers is very important. And if you do use quotes, go back and double-check your quotes to make sure that all the words in your quotes are accurate words. It does slow you down a little bit now, but you'll be so happy down the road that you took the time. And don't ever limit yourself, because you just don't know that you might not want to be saving every precious word that came out of your mouth. Because if we're truly in attunement with our Holy Christ Self and the Masters, then the things we are going to bring forth are going to be worthy of putting into publication. So figure out a system to document what you're releasing. And if you mention a book in a talk, then when you hand out your handout, or if you don't have a handout, in your notes, just write down where that information came from, the book and the publisher and so forth. I've kind of covered, adjust the syllabus as you go along. So you may have too much material, or you may not have enough material. So teachers always like to plan and have a little bit too much, but it's just expect that what you've created is not going to be perfect, because you do the best you can, but then you have different kinds of students in different classrooms, and you have to adjust. And okay, so that's the syllabus preparation. So between now and next week, with the exception of all of your strategies, if you could be thinking about putting this all together, that would be great. And so then by next class, when we meet again, you will be sitting with the syllabus in front of you, either for a workshop. And really, they're not called syllabuses for workshops. I know you're aware of that. But just to get in the habit of thinking along this line, you could create one, even if it was just for a one-hour workshop. Just follow the matrix we've given you and call it a syllabus and create a workshop outline if you find a syllabus for a whole class of 6 weeks very daunting. Okay. Any questions? Okay, so now I'd like to briefly talk about this triangle, the learning pyramid. Now, there's a gentleman who I have great respect for. His name is Parker Palmer. He lives in Wisconsin. He's a professor, I think he's at UW-Madison. He's written a number of books. One of them is called The Heart of Teaching. And I think he's a Quaker. But anyway, his whole premise is that you have to teach from your heart. And unless you're teaching from your heart, you are really not engaging the heart of the student. And, of course, this is what we believe. So he's a good person to read for folks like us who believe the same thing. And he talks about this idea that there's a better way or a best way to teach. And he says that there's no best way, there's no better way. There's the way that engages your heart with the heart of the person you're teaching, and that's the way. And don't get fooled by the literature that says this is the best way or that's the best way, or if you do this, it's not good, or that it's not good. So if you look at this triangle here, you'll see lectures at the top. And all of us know that we sat through many wonderful lectures with Mother. Mother was a brilliant lecturer. And according to this, the retention rate was 5%. Well, I don't know if that's true or not true, because when you have an experience with the Holy Spirit and the Masters bore into you with a light ray, and your whole body is transformed, and your consciousness and your subconscious and everything is transformed with the light, who can say that there's a 5% retention rate, you know? So don't get hung up on this little pyramid. It's just trying to show you all the various ways. We can think of it as just the various ways that we can learn. And obviously teaching others is the best way to learn anything, really, for the long term. And as all of us want to be teachers, then we'll eventually master what we're teaching and retain, hopefully, 100%. So the Holy Spirit acts, and through the Holy Spirit is when true teaching occurs. And this is what Parker Palmer would say is, he doesn't use the word Holy Spirit. He calls it the inner teacher. He borrows that term. But he says that that is a measure, but students just hung on every word because he was so brilliant that everything that came out of his mouth was worth knowing, and it didn't matter to them that he was a boring lecturer. They wanted the knowledge so badly in that specialized field. So, you know, there are many, many kinds of teachers, and there's no one best way. And the way the thing to do is to do it enough to find out what your style is, how you feel comfortable, and try to do that. But always remember that there's two kinds of brains, which we'll get into next week, but there are people that are very holistic in their approach to life and people that are much more sequential and linear in their approach to life. And I've noticed that I make the students who are very linear in their approach to life very uncomfortable in my classes because I'm much more holistic. And so I've learned that over the years, and so I try now to give some very linear, make my assignments and things very linear like I'm doing here with you, because I understand that some kinds of students just really need that. They flounder otherwise, and they feel very uncomfortable and don't enjoy learning. So try to, you know, create something in your syllabus for both kinds of brains, both kinds of learners. And you don't want people who are holistic thinkers to be bored out of their mind by going through such linear discussions that they just can't take flights of fancy every now and then and come up with some brilliant idea and have no place to put it or share it. Okay, so I'm going to then ask for some more 5-minute presentations. Unless we have questions and confusions about the homework or anything that you're going to be doing for next week.
Celeste?
Yes.
Yeah, I just want to maybe understand the concept. This is Ken Mueller.
Yes.
The concept of the syllabus versus a course outline. In other words, the way you have the numbers listed, for some of us, maybe would it be more useful to be able to use the old outline structure of Roman numeral 1 and A and B and that kind of a thing?
You can use any kind of structure you want.
So the syllabus is basically a kind of a quick, not quick snapshot, but in kind of the bird's eye view or the big picture of all the material you intend to present.
Right. Now, typically when I teach, I do not have very, very detailed outlines. That's just the way I teach. To me, this is quite detailed. I could have just said overview of class for the first night. I could have said scope and sequence. That would have been it. And then the second night, I could have put rubric. That would have been it. Review assignments. Third night, I could have put adult learner review assignments. You know, I mean, in other words, you can put as much detail there as you want,
uh-huh.
as you think your reader would benefit from.
Uh-huh.
It depends on what you're teaching, too. Let's say you're teaching Tai Chi or something. I mean, are you going to list every little Tai Chi move you're learning? You know, I don't know. Maybe it's a sequence that they physically experience. So you just would put, you know, Tai Chi practice, 15 minutes, you know.
Well, I was just
what works for you.
Thinking, yeah, if I were just to list using the numbers and not have some numbers beneath those or A, Bs, then it would be less of a useful tool for me. I guess maybe I'm more of a linear thinker. I need to kind of work out more of a structure than just kind of have paragraphs sitting on the page.
Fine, then you can do that.
Okay.
And if I could say something to that, too.
Sure.
What I'm seeing in what the syllabus it is here, the way I use a syllabus, for instance, in the teaching I do in the Montessori training, I write a syllabus that I turn that is published, that's put in our student handbook, you know, that the students receive. And so they have an idea of where I'm going and how I'm going to get there, what I'm covering, the scope, and how I'm going to, you know, the sequence in which I will cover it. But I don't give them my outline that I use, that I lecture from, or that so I don't give them all the details. So this is not all the details of what you're teaching. That you have privately.
That's helpful.
Yeah. So, for instance, last week when I did the 30-minute spiritual preparation teacher, well, I had 3 pages of material that I presented most of it, not all of it, with my sources, with... You know, so that was my personal, those are my personal notes that I worked on to present to you, and that would not go in my syllabus.
I see.
Does that make sense?
So a syllabus could actually, if it's for the consumption of your audience, may just be kind of an overview of what you intend to cover, but it may not necessarily break down every single strategy or tool that you're using
right.
or teaching method to cover that material.
And it shows us what your plan is. How long is it going to be? How, you know, what days? What you're going to cover?
Syllabus, isn't a syllabus kind of like an index in the book, you know?
Well, index at the back of the book, you mean?
No, in the front. The contents.
Well,
yeah, maybe more
table
than
of contents, you mean?
Well, contents without every single chapter yes. being broken down.
Well, you have, this is, you know, you're going to co-create with your Holy Christ self in whatever way your Holy Christ self is going to co-create through you. So whatever works for you is what you want to do. You know, there's no, we're not grading these syllabi to say, oh, they have to be a certain way or they're, you know, there's just whatever works to help you to sequence your ideas and what you would be teaching. Now, when we teach at Mary University, we expect that the teachers here will have a pretty, you know, pretty well organized syllabus because we want to be able to show what is actually going to be accomplished in each class. But if for a work, you know, for a workshop or even a Sunday sermon, you know, it might not look anything like this.
So can we get the author and the name of the book again, the Learning Pyramid?
Well, this came from the National Training Laboratories, and that's as far as I can tell you.
Were you talking about Parker Palmer?
Is oh, Parker Palmer's
know?
Book?
Yes.
Yeah. Parker Palmer's book is The Heart of Teaching.
Teaching, thank you.
Heart of Teaching. Yeah. Okay, so let's have some more 5-minute presentations.
Celeste?
Yeah.
This is Marcia Hammond, California. I just have a brief question. You said about the man who wrote the book, The Heart of Teaching, you said he borrowed the expression inner teacher. Who did you mean that he borrowed it from?
Well, that teaching actually goes back to Pestalozzi. Maria Montessori used it as well. It's been in the literature for a long time.
Okay. I was wondering if it was actually going back to Gautama Buddha.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean,
how do you spell the name that you gave me just now?
Parker Palmer?
Pestalozzi.
Yeah.
Oh, Pestalozzi.
Thank you.
I mean, I think that's a spiritual concept that's been around forever, don't you think?
Yeah, I was just wondering who you meant that he had borrowed it from. That I was just wanting to know that.
Okay, Anita, you want to randomly pick?
Oh, do I get to do it again?
Yeah.
Okay, let's see, from the beginning of the list. Oh, let's see, Carol Daly. Is Carol with us? No. Carol? Kathleen Chu? Kathleen. Okay, I'll go down the other way then. Lisa Delaney?
Hi. Am I working? There we go. Hi
I'm Lisa.
Here. Well, the problem is I got my math done, but I need to do more research on it to present this topic.
Okay.
5 minutes worth of this information. So, sorry, I can't really give you 5 minutes on it right now.
Okay. Cheryl Bench?
Hi. You know, I think I did mine wrong. I got it all done, but I didn't do it on one strand. I did mine on the whole scope of the whole thing.
Well, that's okay.
So,
do you just have 5 minutes worth of something to share with us?
Well, I can I think I have about 5 minutes. But like I said, it doesn't go down just one strand, and it's not a lot of information. It's basically, you know, the questions and the concepts of what I'd like to present in the course.
Well, because sometimes it would be more like a survey of showing up wider, because sometimes we can go deep with one thing or we can go wide. So if you want to just kind of give us the whole a larger scope, telling us that you could go detail with any of those, it'd still be interesting, don't you think, Celeste?
Yeah.
Yeah, please.
Okay.
Good.
Okay. My topic is the culture of the Divine Mother. And the course that I would like to be giving or working on is entitled The Culture of the Divine Mother. And it's an extremely interesting topic to me for a number of reasons. And one is which, because I'm living in an area that is the remnant of the lost continent of Lemuria. And recently, Mother Mary gave a dictation at the Santa Barbara Mission, and she talked about how this area, there once was a temple of the Divine Mother that stood in the same place. And so, as a result of that dictation, I've gotten very interested in this topic. And so I did my concept map, and I'm looking at different ideas, including, number one, who is the Divine Mother? How is she represented historically and in our current life? So why is the Divine Mother so important? And how can we understand this concept based on what teachings are available? Number two is what historical data is available to give credibility to the idea that there were once golden age civilizations that recognized the feminine nature of God as well as the masculine. So this would be exploring different types of books and publications and possibly movements, spiritual movements that address this situation or this idea, and talking about that to bring out this information that says, or concept that I'd like to explore is, what characterizes a civilization that recognizes the divine feminine in addition to the masculine part of divinity? And in this area, I would like to explore the cultural aspects of society through looking at art, music, current music and culture and theater, attitudes and prejudices, even poetry and different writings, and have a discussion on these different areas of society and see what areas could be brought out that show differences in looking at feminine versus masculine aspects of God and of life. The next area that I'd like to look at is, what benefits accrue to a society that worships both male and female aspects of divinity? And this, I think, would be really interesting because it would give us an idea of what we're missing today in our society versus what was available in some of these golden age civilizations that we will discuss earlier in the course. The fifth area is, how have civilizations changed over time? And if the mother culture has disappeared, how did that come about? The sixth area is, how do the world religions see the role of women and the divine feminine versus how our culture today views the feminine aspect of being? And a subtopic in this area could be relevance of Adam and Eve and their story to previous and current culture. The seventh area is, how does the Divine Mother play a part in the etheric retreats and in the heaven world and in the literature that we have to look at? And how does the Divine Blueprint affect life on Earth today? And then finally, the last area I'd like to investigate would be, how can a civilization return or restore lost values that have been submerged under popular cultural norms? And so how does our society and civilization look at this type of information, and how can you get back some values maybe that were once held in high esteem versus what our popular culture is showing today. So that's basically what I would like to do, and like I said, I don't have any specific details. I mean, I know a lot of information about each of these areas, but obviously I would have to do more research in order to have definite information that I would put in each of these categories.
Great.
Okay. Well, that was a lot of information.
And Cheryl,
makes us all,
you know,
want to go do research with you, Cheryl.
Yeah, I know. I think we should. We need a team of people to help you. Now, Cheryl, in your case, and people listening may have the same kind of experience, you're going to have to go out and find out everything that's ever been written on the Divine Mother, as well as what you know, want to bring forth, because ideally you'd be able to bring your knowledge as a new layer of knowledge on what's out there. Maybe there's nothing out there, in which case it's wonderful. You have a whole new field to plow without any tracks ahead of you. But and all of us have to think about that in terms of our topic. If we're talking about some concept that a lot of other people have talked about and we never mention those other famous people, then it looks like we really don't know very much because we don't know about these famous people who've already talked about our topic. So
right.
Once you're all done, it wouldn't hurt to Google your topic and just see what you find. And, you know, because if you're going to be an expert in one area, you're going to have to know about all the other people in that same area who are writing and talking about your topic.
Right, yeah. And I've done quite a bit of research already, but I'm still finding more and more, so there is a lot out there.
I know. So that's a great idea. I'm thinking a book here, a real big. I see book flashing in front of me. It'll be a wonderful course, too.
It's a very interesting subject. The more I find out, the more I'm excited and the more I want to find out.
Yeah.
Well, Cheryl, when you get the class ready to go, sign me up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
I think Mother might want to dictate, wouldn't you think, David?
Oh, yeah.
I think that'd be great.
That'd be great.
And that's the key, really, is the passion. And I could hear the passion in the voice of Lenore, in the voice of Joyce, in the voice of Cheryl. We find what really is calling to us, and to just now we just kind of need to organize it and get some people, you know, coaches or team helping us, but it's to find that what we're ready to go for.
And the reason that Anita and I are teaching this together is to model for you how to work as a team and how to, you know, in this case, I'm the teacher, she's the TA, although she's really not a TA in her status, but just working together, we're modeling that for you so you can see kind of how the TA, even if they just hold the balance and don't even speak, it's just helpful to have two people there, I think. It's a good thing to think about. So you might want to think about how you would use your teaching assistant, what they would do, what you would do.
Okay, we should go again.
Mm-hmm.
John Turnquist.
Hello.
Hey, John.
Hi.
Are you ready to go?
I'm kind of coming back, coming through the back door in a sense. Found out about your news at the very end of it, so I'm just, I didn't hear a thing last week.
Okay, well, maybe you'll get it, maybe you'll want to do it another time, or do you?
Maybe another time.
Yeah, okay.
I need to know how to get online to look at, get all the syllabus stuff and everything.
Okay. Okay, well, you can talk to Sol about that to make sure you have all that.
Yep.
Okay, let's see. Okay, close my eyes. Patricia Carlson.
I'm not prepared.
Okay, that's all right. Donna Korth.
Okay, I'm here.
Okay.
I'm not sure how prepared I am, but I can share with you what I have.
Good.
What I decided to do was share how I would, to tell how I would share my testimony of, and on my strand, I had a couple of things that I was working on. My spiritual journey as a child and my spiritual journey as an adult. And I think I'll share with you from my spiritual journey as an adult and the nodes that I had from that. Basically, since this is a testimony and I have so many opportunities, I might just mention that we have gone out two by two in our area in Dallas, and knowing how to share our testimonies is a very important thing because people want to know where you're coming from and why. Anyway, my spiritual journey as an adult would be my first node, I guess, and then from there, I went to nursing school, and I saw people dying, and I was very disturbed by it. Along came the Billy Graham crusade, and I went not knowing what else to do. I dedicated my life to God at the Billy Graham crusade. Then, as I continued as an adult speaking, I decided to be a missionary nurse, and a link from that is I graduated from nursing school, met my husband, and we joined up together to serve with an evangelical group called the Navigators. But as time went on and I had a handicapped son, I became unsatisfied with the limited material I had. Not that it's limiting, but, well, it was limiting to me in only using the Bible. So I began to read Edgar Cayce books, and I would hide in my closet and read whatever I could manage to hide and read in secret. And one day I was emptying garbage for my neighbors, my old elderly neighbors, and as the garbage fell out of the newspaper they wrapped it in, there was an article on Elizabeth Clare Prophet covered in tomato sauce. And I read it and became very convicted, and but I didn't know what to do because I was involved in another ministry. So this was the most audible voice I heard at that time saying, you need to pursue this, which I'm sure was my Christ self. But I put it aside and waited a few more years until I moved to Texas and went to the Texas State Fair and met some people from the Summit Lighthouse of Dallas in a booth. And they sold me a book called The Human Studies of the Human Aura. And I put that aside for a while until a social worker where I worked insisted that I read this book he had called Saint Germain and Alchemy. So there were three things that happened. And finally, I thought, I better sit up here and take notice. And so I read the books and was convicted down to my toes and didn't know anybody who knew anything about this. But I found an 800 number in the back and called and found out about it. Then I could go on here. I don't know how much time I have left.
Well, you have you actually have two more minutes.
Okay.
But you don't have to use it, but you do have it.
Okay, well, I think I'll stop there. And anybody who wants to know the rest of the story can call me.
Thank you. I thought you were going to tell us about how you found the heart center.
Well, I could do that, but that's part of the exciting part.
Oh, we'll wait for that. Okay. Well,
Donna,
thank you, Donna.
Who are you hiding from in secret?
Everybody. All the evangelical group.
Well, thank you, Donna.
You're welcome.
Okay. So, I think it's... Okay. Carolyn Dunnigan? Is she with us?
Oh, I guess I'm not ready.
Okay. That's all right. Okay. Anita Hulbert. Are you there? No. Okay. Gregory Mascari.
Anita, are you going in alphabetical order?
No, I'm
no,
just,
we're just randomly picking
I'm
names.
Being just very random. I'm closing my eyes and running my finger down the list and stop right on Nancy Frainer.
Hello.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I just listened to the last week today and worked on my, what is this circle called?
Concept map.
Yeah, that's as far as I got before I had to listen to the class tonight.
Okay.
So, not ready.
Okay.
Kathleen, were you on when she called your name earlier?
Who?
Kathleen.
Kathleen Chu was called.
Oh, is Kathleen on?
No,
Kathleen,
I don't think.
Kathleen Chu, that's me.
Are you there, Kathleen?
I'm here, yes.
You want to do yours?
Oh, I can do mine, yes. Go
ahead.
Great. Okay. Okay. Well, yesterday I had the great opportunity of giving a presentation on the Pure Joy System to our Santa Rosa study group here. And that was about an hour. And so I will take one strand out of that. And the strand I'm going to take is about light.
Okay. Great.
All right, here we go. So, all right. So, in the beginning, God said, let there be light. The idea in the beginning was for us to learn how to use God's gifts of his energy, the light. Every thought we think, every word we speak, and action we do uses a bit of this light, this energy. And as we made various choices, we made more mistakes than we did things well. And rather than garner greater amounts of light, we lost our light and became denser and denser and felt bad. Now, each of us has a unique pattern to our soul, and this is where the light ends up. The fleur de lis, the symbol of the threefold flame, represents light particles in the soul. And you, each one of us, put your own unique stamp on each bit of energy that you send out. So once it comes into you, you then send it out. And these fleur de lis light forms, being as little tiny electrons, come through your crystal quartz. These electrons are what the soul uses to create everything in her world. When she uses them correctly, they always come back to her when they have finished their mission. Because you know, what comes around, what goes around, comes around. Now, if these messages are sent out positively, they return to your causal body. But if the energies that were sent out were negative, they still come back. Because they are dense, they go to the lowest part of the electronic belt. Because they were misused, they come back misshapen. Because they were tossed and turned and hit and abused. Now, this light, what is this light? The light is in you. It's the light you use every day. The light that created the universe. It's pure white light that has all the colors in it. This light is pure joy. And the smallest manifestation of that is the electron. These electrons are the light body of the universe. They are pure universal light substance having intelligence within them that responds like lightning, both the creative power of our creator and man. These electrons in varying forms make up the atoms of the physical world. Now, when these messages go out, they can be seen like creations with wings, like a big boomerang. They cycle out from us and magnify themselves according to the intensity of the intent and the desire for the fulfillment of our creation. Where your intent or visualization of the form of your desire is strong, your creation will be correspondingly strong. But where it's weak, the creation will have a hard time manifesting. Now, Saint Germain told us about this, and he said that the number of electrons which combine with each other in a specific atom is the result of and determined by conscious intent, whereas the rate at which they whirl about the central core is the result of and determined by desire. That's our desire. The constructive intent and harmonious desire within a human mind and body are activities of love and order. This is the act of creation by which we become more of light. On the other hand, destructive thought forms and discordant feelings so rearrange the ratio and the rate of the speed of electrons within the atom that that's when we become dense. Now, after these thought forms have gone out from us, they must eventually find a resting place, because as I said, what goes out comes back. So they eventually come home like a homing pigeon right back to us. Now, where do they reside when they come back home? Well, again, it depends on the shape that they're in when they return. Some will return with a lot of light. They'll be filled to the brink with light. They may be enlarged and magnified as they have picked up more and more light in their travels. If they are very light, they go to a special place for safekeeping. This place is the causal body. It's like the mansions that Jesus talked about when he said, "My Father's kingdom has many mansions." Now, it's also like a big library. This place is like a library that contains a whole system for cataloging these light forms with filing cabinets for easy retrieval when needed. There's pink file cabinets for your lovely thoughts and green file cabinets for your healing thoughts and actions. So it's all kind of categorized according to those colors, which we will talk about later. Now, another one. Is that it? My time is up?
That's the bell.
That's the bell. Okay, great.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Certainly welcome.
Once again, I hope you could all hear how much information was conveyed in a five-minute period of time. It's astounding, isn't it, when you really think about it?
It's a long time. Yeah,
yeah, it is.
So, Les, can I make a comment? Because, like I said, I gave part of this yesterday.
Yeah.
And when you're actually, when I was actually in front of people, I did slow down because I got through 20 slides just now. I did it in a PowerPoint, whereas it took me an hour to go through 100 yesterday.
Uh-huh.
But what was very interesting was that the biggest comment I got was that I went too fast, and that there was so much information in there that it could be broken down into many little topics, and you know, I should be pausing and asking questions and all. So
right.
It really does depend, you know, on your audience as to
right.
how much. But you can, if you talk fast like this, you know, audience.
Reminds
well,
me of how you read fast when we were on the California tour. You had to get a lot in a short time.
Yeah. This has been very informative because we're learning from each other, so I'm grateful that those of you who share were willing to help us to learn what we can do with 5 minutes of time from our own Holy Christ selves. Very lovely. So, are there any final remarks from Seoul? Do you have anything you need to share with us? The phone number will be the same next week.
Yes, it will be.
Can you hear me?
I have a question. Was anyone able to print the second attachment that Seoul sent to us? That's the PDF things that were scanned, it looked like.
Yeah, we redid those a second time.
This line is now unmuted.
So maybe you got the first version.
Okay,
sure.
I must have, yeah. Alrighty.
Have her send them to you again.
Okay.
Well, I've been sending the Word files, and some people had a problem printing that, and some people were able to print the PDF files, which were more difficult to print. So one person couldn't print the pyramid, and I sent her the PDF files, but I don't know what to do about that. Just suggest that she talk to tech support.
Yeah. Well, maybe if you know somebody else in the class and you're emailing with them, they could send you whatever they were able to open in the format that they were able to open it.
So in MS Word, I tried to print out the geometric forms, the images,
mm-hmm.
and nothing came up. You have to go into that first window, your print window, and open up options. And then it gives you a menu of different things, radio buttons. And you have to click on the radio button that allows you to print images that are in the file or in the document.
Oh, thank you,
That's
Ken.
That's not highlighted. You won't come up with anything.
Okay,
you,
maybe
Ken.
Donna can do that. Can you do that, Donna?
I'm going to try.
Okay.
Clicked on images so that images will be printed in your document.
Okay, thank you.
Could we have another quick review of what our homework assignment is for the...
Okay, you're going to create your syllabus. First you're going to start with your rubric. Create your rubric first to assess the learning that's going to take place, and then go back and do your syllabus and try to put in as much as you possibly can of the detail in an outline form or whatever works for you.
Celeste,
the only thing you don't need to worry too much about is your teaching strategies yet. Just try to get the information that you're going to convey. The what it is you're going to teach, and then next class we'll talk about the how you're going to teach it.
So we're going to keep the syllabus to ourselves. We don't send it to you, Celeste?
Not yet, not yet.
All right. Okay.
Not yet. There's nothing to send to us this week.
Except send the name,
the topic to Anita.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, everyone? Anita, would you like to seal us tonight?
Okay. In name of our own mighty I Am Presence, the I Am Presence of each one here in this class and all of our students of the future, And we see this as a mighty concept map of extending out and out and out, and the people that we will reach and the people that they will reach is a mighty alchemy of the Lord. Beloved masters, beloved world teachers, we thank you for this opportunity to be together and this opportunity to have our wonderful teacher Celeste with us to help us as we prepare ourselves, and our wonderful messengers with us, and all the richness that we have been given, that we may be instruments in disseminating this to this world that is whitened into the harvest. Amen.
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 Amen. Thank you, everyone.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you. Good night.